just take a couple of minutes to give an outline of the time together. Of being here, sometimes some areas of questions or areas of interest or concern arise for you. And you're welcome to come and sit here. Some inquiry gets underway. With the inquiry, as I mentioned, you may have something that you would like to speak about, maybe from the meditation, the talks, the instructions, areas of interest and concern which are important for you. Sometimes too there's communication in which I'll ask you some questions back as well, and some dialogue gets underway. With the inquiry time, it might last for just a few minutes, and sometimes it goes on for much longer, whatever seems appropriate. At any time, the person who is speaking or myself can say thank you to bring the inquiry to a close at any point. And there's a couple of shared minutes of silence together. After a couple of minutes, I'll say anyone, and then another person may wish to come and speak. So that there is some flow and communication, and it flows from communicating to some silence, a couple of minutes, back into the flow of communication. In the silent time, for there to be sometimes just kind of meditation or reflection on what was said. When the communication, the inquiry is underway, the great majority, of course, are engaged in the act of listening. Listening is the fullness of listening, and therefore it means not only listening to two people who are speaking, but also deeply listening inwardly. Are there any responses that are taking place as you listen? Sometimes listening and response inwardly is with interest and connection with the flow. And, sometimes you're listening and you're agitated. Therapeutic. It's emotional, or it's too conceptual, or it's not enough of this, or not enough of that, or whatever. And just you want just to catch what's going on inside of us as you listen. What's the response in the act of the listening, which is there? Hopefully, there's empathy and connection, it's valuable for each and every one of us. Working, sometimes goes well, sometimes doesn't. I have the recorder here. You may be blessed, you may not get it to function. So, with the recorder, I'll check if I get it working. I'll check with you that it's okay to use. And if the recording is made, then you'll need to remember it's in what's called the public domain. That means sometimes people order it. All sorts of people. Your mother. Heaven forbid. It might end up on the net and then 6 billion people order it. It is unlikely, but you know, you never know your luck. So, and if you prefer not, no problem whatsoever. We don't record. So let me just give me a half a minute before I... Sometimes it cooperates and sometimes... Ah, it's going to cooperate. Alright, it is. So if anything is hold, which you would like to explore, ask about, speak about experiences or concerns or whatever. This is a very, very open forum for this. And just one small final point is your good voice, though we are speaking rather close, needs to carry to the good souls in the far realms over there. And if you can't hear at the back, and sometimes on deeper things it's a bit hard to raise the voice, there's space down the aisle, please feel free to use it, and around here. And just today, one of the staff was asking me how many we can get into the hall. I said, oh, lots more than what's in here at the moment, etc., because I've been to India, I know. or as they said at Jack Cornfield Centre, somebody said, how many get in the hall here? And he said, around 500, it's a large, very large one, about 500. And somebody said, well, 500 Americans and 1,000 Indians. I think we're nearer to the 1,000 than the 500 here. So. All right, so anyone would like to come? Anything that you would like to ask or speak about? Hopefully your good voice will carry further if you can't hear and then have to get in closer. Yes, anyone? Please come. With the recording?
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Good try.
I'm curious about the border between being very egoistic, because very too much busy with my senses, with what I feel, with what I think, with what I do, and being sensitive to the other.
Let me just get the picture. One is the connection with yourself. There, and the sense of borders, and then there's a connection with the others, being sensitive to them. In the 2 days, roughly, since you arrived, has there been any experience or where there has been some uncertainty or indecision? Do I listen to myself? Or am I sensitive to others? Has it arisen here? Or elsewhere.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to say go on?
Yeah, because like it was very egoistic to leave the family.
Can you hear me?
To leave the family and everybody else in my obligation towards the Passover application.
Yes.
And instead of taking care of them, I came here. So that's right.
Slowly, slowly, with the view.
Like
a guilt. Right. One says, oh, there's the Seder, the Passover, and then that finishing on the Saturday night, early hours of Sunday, whatever. What makes it for you egotistical to come here for a few days? Is it by coming here, by not having contact with the family for a few days, therefore we should conclude this is ego? Conclude?
It's not exactly like what I feel, because otherwise I wouldn't be here. But no. How everybody else gets it.
So everybody else means your family. So what? Let me ask you this. What's the voices of your family? Because others will know this feeling a bit as well. Did your family say anything specifically to you about coming here?
No.
They didn't? And how can you be so sure about what they think? They may have said, "Oh, thank God she's gone." Maybe. Well, they may think, "Oh God, she's running away again, she's abandoning us," or whatever. But in fact, nothing actually was said.
No.
So, is it best to leave it just in that way? Nothing was said, so actually I don't actually know, because they didn't say, I haven't asked, and therefore I'm just engaged in a movement to action to I know.
Yeah, because I said I'm coming, I didn't ask their permission.
I should hope not at your age. You're an adult. Exactly. All right. All right. So sometimes we take some time away from loved ones, from friends and family, still with either their approval or disapproval or not knowing, to come back to the question, is it still egotistical to come on a retreat?
From my point of view, no.
No. How would you know what, shall we say, a wise, skillful, beneficial, yeah, and what just egotistical? How would you sense the difference? Somebody coming out, just to me, I just want to be by myself. Me, I, my. And that, and the difference between that and just the wise, something might be useful for a few days to explore. How would you know the difference between egotistical and, shall we call it, exploration? What would tell you the difference between the two? For you.
If I feel that I improve myself through being here.
If you improve yourself. Alright, nice. But sometimes it can be a person comes and explores to develop and look and perhaps come to the end of the few days. And they're not sure if they're making progress, regress, or stagnation. Some people don't really come in. They don't know if they're going forwards, backwards, or sideways. Would the result tell us if it's egotistical or not?
No.
No. All right, good. How has your experience been in the last couple of days? If you wish.
Yeah, it's a good one because it's not my first one.
No.
I've been to retreat.
Be previously. Mm-hmm. Good. So,
so I'm coming back. It means that it's good for me.
All right. Mm-hmm. In something which is beneficial and good for you, would you like to say, if you wish, one or two of the ways that it has been or is good for you? Because there might be some people that are in desperate need of some encouragement.
it makes me see things differently.
All right. Can I even ask you a bit further? What sort of things have you or are you seeing differently?
Like being more, using more compassion with my wisdom.
All right. Things that's happening. All right. Lovely. So compassion, Dharma language, is the act of love, but it has a specific purpose to it and helps to work with other people's problems or difficulties or suffering. And sometimes one's own. It's an act of compassion for oneself to help look at and explore and resolve difficulties. Compassion. The Buddha said that must go in all directions. We must be included in the field, ourselves in the field of compassion. Any other areas that have been important for you?
I can be more sensitive to what's around me.
Nice. Good, good. And your stillness is very nice. I'm much more sensitive. So that also, the sense of stillness is very nice rather to give the kind of relaxed feeling as well. Yeah. Anything else you'd like to say today?
That I love this experience and I wish to come more and more times.
Oh, good. Very good. Thank you very much. Lovely to come. Thank you. So we have a couple of quiet minutes together, and then I'll say anyone, and then another person may wish to come and speak. Yes, anyone, anytime. Yes, please come. With the recording?
It's okay.
It's all right. Okay, thank you.
My subject is to. Looking for the word.
Looking for the word. Can catch the whisper. So my subject is
to be a Buddhist to those who are not generous to me.
Be a Buddhist
to
those who are not generous to me.
To be able to like and see people, even those they don't treat me as I wish.
I see. How is being a Buddhist going to help you? There are plenty of nasty Buddhists around you.
No, they try to be Buddhist.
Huh?
When I meditate, there is the anger, and there is
anger. Right.
Anger or tiredness or many things, but I feel that there is something more than this.
Yeah.
And then I have some love to myself.
Yeah.
When it comes to the environment, when my neighbor threw cigarettes to my yard, he is only the one who threw cigarettes to my yard. Mm. He's not another soul that can meditate, that has a center. Am I clear? I'm not.
I think this can be across. Can we drop the identity Buddhist for a moment?
It is a wish.
It's nice, is it? Okay. sometimes we are in contact with others, as you say. Your neighbor's throwing his or her cigarettes down into your yard, and somebody else is throwing some nasty words at you, somebody else is blaming you, all these things that go on. What's the sense of how you would like to be when faced with blame, resentment, hostility, negativity, anger, hatred, misunderstanding? What's the sense of how you would like to respond inside? What do you want to bring out of yourself?
I wish to be able to bring Some love. Yes.
Right. Wonderful. Precious. So, what's getting in the way of your love for your cigarette smoking, throwing in your yard? What's getting in the way? Somebody, you know, is it a man?
I don't know who that is.
You don't know who that is?
No, I mean, I'm not talking also about my neighbors. I took it as an example.
It is. But the example is a metaphor, isn't it? It's an archetype.
Okay.
There are many ways which people are throwing cigarettes at.
I don't. When I get out into my yard and see the cigarettes,
yes.
The hate arises.
The hate?
Yes.
Right.
Why?
Hmm. Why does the, not unusual, but why does the hate, what is it that brings hate out of us?
I wake up early.
You wake up early?
I meditate, and you then
meditate.
I go into my yard.
Maybe you need to meditate in your yard.
I want to make the connection.
The most important connection. There's no more important connection. The connection in which love dissolves the hate. This is the great connection of life. More important than all the others that we talk about. This is the great connection. Say a little bit more, because so firstly, there's the eye contact, isn't there? You walk into your yard and there are these stubs of these cigarettes. Yeah. Then what happens right after that? Your eye falls, the cigarette. What happens after that? Because it's the same event everywhere. It's a cigarette today, it's the words tomorrow, it's some noise another day, it's some poor tasting food another day, it's some smell. It's a memory, it's an idea about the future. Anything can be the spark for the anger, can't it? Anything. In this case, it's a small example, as you said. First it's the eyes. You see, then what happens after that?
Then the anger arises, and then there are two possibilities. Sometimes I do the thing that I don't like doing, I throw it back.
You throw it back.
I don't like it. So
into anybody's yard? Or?
Back to their
yard.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
No. All right.
It is not the way. Sometimes I just take it, which I prefer.
to pick it up and put it in the bin. It.
No, in my garbage.
I prefer, I see it as.
Okay. I don't want it to be dependent on them. If they throw garbage, okay, I have the right to throw garbage. It is not the way I want to live.
No, right.
But if it, okay, so I solved the act, but I didn't solve the feeling.
No, let's go slowly. So sometimes we see or hear something. And very, very quickly, there is a reaction. We call it anger, hatred. And we're burning up inside. We burn inside. We burn up love. That's what we burn up inside. And then there's a little bit more space might come. And that little bit more space says, well, I could do this or I could do that. I could just react in the same way. I could just become a clone of my neighbor. She or he throws this to me, I throw it back. So therefore there's no difference between the two of you. Or one says, oh, I can just pick up this dog end, as we call it, and just put it in the dustbin. Though you don't throw it back, nevertheless, there is still an unpleasant sensation of feeling left.
Yes, I'm not really changed. Only the act is changed.
Slowly, slowly, slowly. The act is as much you as everything else. So, you don't wish to just do as the other does. You hurt me, I hurt you. You don't wish to do, to play that, engage in that. So the act is the movement, pick up the cigarette and put it in the dustbin. So not the reaction against there. But you're saying, that act, you feel you're not changing because of the act. Why is that? Are you sure?
I act for my mind, not for my heart.
Ah. It sounds like it, right? To be honest, I doubt it. So sometimes we think with the act of love, what's the kind of feeling which, or sensation or feeling you're looking for to show it's love? Because it's from your heart.
I know it.
What do you know?
When I make an act of love, I know. When I give food to my children, I know that it is love.
Yes. It is. How do you know?
It is only a decision in my mind. I have to cook to my children.
Right.
I feel it. I just know.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I don't agree with you. You know, but I'll explain. We'll go a little further. You're a parent. And as a parent, you prepare the food for the children. And I agree, it can be an act of warmth, an act of love, an act of kindness, an act of imagination, creativity, playfulness, etc. It's a very warm feeling there. And the feeling is pleasant. I'm a mother, I'm doing something for my kids. For the act of love to take place, does it have to have a pleasant feeling with it?
I guess not.
You're right. You don't have to get it.
I have an example of loving a sick person and taking care of him.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It wouldn't be a pleasant
thing
to do.
All right. Somebody throws a cigarette end over your yard, and it's there. You don't want to imitate, just to have the same mindset as this person. So you respond in a different way. And the response is not to react. And therefore you pick it up and you put it in the dustbin. None of that would feel very pleasant to do, would it? Who wants to pick up some cigarette end been sticking inside somebody's mouth and has to put it in the bin? So it's rather all unpleasant. You know, from your experience.
The problem is not liquid, the problem is the feeling.
Is it?
Yes.
Why? Why do you want love to always be associated with a warm feeling?
It is love. What should I do with the cigar?
Yes. Yeah, of course it is.
Why is it love?
Because you're not engaging in a reaction on your neighbors. It's a statement of non-hate. It's a statement of non-blame. It's a statement of non-reactivity. It's a statement of, I'm not going to do to you what you are doing to me. I call that love.
I cannot choose my feeling, but I can choose my act.
All right, okay. So, as I say, to repeat a little bit, as a very good example, you're caring for somebody, they're very sick, they're dying, or whatever. Not easy to be with. But there is an action. The action is giving support too. And it's not easy, it can be difficult. Feelings inside are not easy either. But nevertheless, it's still the act of love. I mean, should love be exclusively tied to feeling good?
Now it has to do with another thing, which is more comfortable. It is easier.
You're going to answer the question.
I'm going to.
Are you going to answer the question? Is love exclusively tied to feeling good? Is your head going up and down or side to side?
Up and down.
Up and down. Up and down.
Because
so if you didn't feel good with the sick person, because it's not easy to be with a sick person, then it wouldn't be love.
So love has to do also with unpleasant things. Okay, I agree.
Wonderful. Oh. All right. Love has very much to do with unpleasant things. Very much to do with it. It has as much to do with it as the pleasant. Completely. Too easily. Associate love with a feeling. You know, you're a mother when your little ones were very small. I'm quite sure they probably woke up in the middle of the night. I'm sure you didn't think, oh, wonderful. Just great, I've got another broken night's sleep. I feel so good about it. No, you woke up and you didn't feel like having to pick the baby up, didn't feel like having to walk up and down, didn't feel like having to give the breast to the baby, or whatever the feeling was. Not a love with that. You got happy. That's the baby. Feeling. If you relied on your feeling, you'd go, you'd kick it on with it. Right, so pleasant feeling and unpleasant feeling go with love, equally. Equally. Thank you. Yes, anyone? Yes, hi.
Thank
you. With the recording? Yeah.
Fine.
Fine? Okay, yes. All right.
The technical...
It's a technical question.
Question.
Right.
I'm a little bit confused because I used to, I'm sorry, I'm pointing my back. Right. No?
The voice that matters. But anyway, carry on.
I go every year to a retreat.
Mm-hmm. With Tovana or elsewhere?
No, not Tovana, Goenka.
Oh, Goenka. Mm.
And my technical confusion is that normally when I used to sit in the Goenka retreat, I was very busy.
Mm.
No, up and down, up and down. Had no time to think about anything.
Not a few, let me just maybe explain a little bit here. That, in the Goenka courses, they are 10 days, and rather well known in the Dharma world for lots and lots of sitting and moving the attention up and down through the body, experiencing sensation. So you found the doing of that being rather busy, did you?
In a way busy, but in a way no time to think about anything
else. No,
nothing.
And
anyway, and I was sitting on my pillow here for 2 days, and I was really very enjoying the sensation. And then yesterday, you were saying something about if you came with an issue. Maybe it would be clarified, or maybe you should want to clarify something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was until then I was very happy.
then I started to think whether I should involve all the issues I left back at home.
Yes.
In my wonderful peaceful city.
Oh, yeah.
And because I came here to relax.
But I'm finding it hard to apologize. So, how many Goenka courses have you done?
12.
Good, so you're a very experienced sweeper.
Yes. I even offered to sweep the floor.
it's called sweeping. The attention. What, apart from dropping away a lot of thought, what else has been beneficial for you with the Tendo Goenka courses? What's been helpful and useful for you?
I should sit all night. Well, I find the automatic reaction for any well, I don't have automatic responses because it happened in my life anymore.
No.
It's just I see something, I see it is happening, I feel the joy.
Stimulation.
I feel the stimulation.
Yes.
And I don't need to react
for it. Lovely. So one of the great benefits of the form of the meditation, cutting off thought, moving these sensations through the body, and establishing a rather strong equanimity. Non-reaction, shall we say, to lots of situations. Any limitations that you found with the 10-day during the course?
Well, actually, I didn't have 10 days.
All right.
I had 1 week.
So. Oh, 1 week. Right. So, any limitations? Things have their benefits and limits here and there. Any limits to the method, the rather strict technique and form and structure. Any limits for you? Limitations for you? In that? No. So what brings you here?
I had 1 week.
You had 1 week?
And I saw
so
you
we get the one
in Tel Aviv, and I really enjoyed your talking.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to try also this course.
Dear brothers and sisters in the Goenka world disapprove of people exploring and trying elsewhere, don't they?
Well, they also disapprove about doing Reiki and all kinds of
things. I know.
I don't take it serious.
Oh, good. Very good. No. Nor do we either.
So you have to take the useful things, not the whole.
No, good attitude. Very
but,
good.
No, but really, I'm curious. Should we... Because I'm enjoying, but I don't know if I should deal with the big issues I left behind, or should I keep on just I also explore my breath, and it's beautiful. Sure. I'm a yoga teacher. I always explore my breath, and I like it. But I'm confused about.
Yeah, that's a good question. I hear your voice. It is an important question. It is regularly brought up here, and I'll try to give some overview for you and also for others. Sometimes with the meditation, in all the four postures, which we have great value for all four postures. The Buddha, in the same breath, was speaking, sitting, walking, standing, and reclining. Consistent encouragement to really value these postures that a human being finds herself or himself in as a real field for awareness and meditation and practice. It's just been lovely to see people here really committed to doing their walking meditation, studying, really committed to finding a shady spot under the tree, some people, half an hour, 1 hour, just standing still, real present, and there's great value in that. For some, with that, it might require just a trust. And the trust is, if there is something which needs attention, which is major, big in my life, that in the space of the day, and in my meditation practice, it will have a chance to come through. And a little bit like in the cooks, when we're at home, we put the vegetables in the water and it boils it a bit. A bit of the old froth, dark froth, starts coming up to the surface. So sometimes that happens for people, just quite naturally, quite organically, in the process of sitting, walking, standing, and reclining. There are things to be attended to. We are not saying here, and it's not part of the our view, that one absolutely, strictly must go back to the method and technique. It's not the way of looking at it. The method and the technique, in the forms and the postures, genuinely are, I would say, very helpful and grounding. But sometimes we really have to look at what is this issue which is going on? What are the causes that bring it about? And of course, very fundamentally, what has to be changed? So sometimes, in your calmness, in your relaxation, in your happiness to be here, in the feeling of having time and space away, for some people, there is the confidence that one can, while being here, turn one's attention to an area which requires some insight because there's some problem, something's unresolved, something needs our attention, and can look at it in the course of the day, either alone or meeting with a teacher or in a small group or in the meditations. And in that willingness to look at that, yet not get completely lost in it, that one spends all day, all night going over it. We need some quality and some depth, that doesn't have to be a big depth, of enough calmness and clarity, enough trust that basically we can come back to the moment, come back to the meditation. But we also need the trust to be able to attend to issues. And I do see from my observation, inner and outer, that keeping exclusively to the method and technique will help to answer all things. But, so in that respect, sometimes it's just trust, and if it needs to, things need to arise, they will arise, and sometimes it's intentional, purposeful wish to look at something that needs some attention. And Dharma is equally concerned with awareness, is equally concerned with mindfulness, with meditation, and with reflection. So, having just listened to that, what's your response?
I've been trying to do a combination today.
A combination? Combining what with what?
I was reflecting a little bit, and when I got lost, I came back.
All right, nice.
Where breath.
Did you have a rather, Buddha uses this word, siddhi, kind of power? But sometimes we want to look at something. We had some quiet time here. We had some opportunity, some space for ourselves to look at something. When you realized you were getting lost, did you have the power of mind, the great siddhi here? The power of mind to bring your attention back to the practice.
Yes, I laugh about it and then I come back.
All right, very good. All right. So there's that confidence that you can look into areas. Of course, I'm now curious. What's boring?
It's boring to the mind is talking and talking. It's boring, you know, it's like You know, I see like five people I treat every day.
Yes.
And I hear the mind talking. And after 1 week, I've seen 25 like these, you know, and it's talking, and it's boring. So for me, the meditation is a way of just, you know,
chill out
a little bit, because it's the same. It's repeating. It is,
but
even the biggest problems you have, it's like in 1 year from now, you will look at it and you will laugh
or cry. Because that problem may have got bigger by next year. Some people are carrying around problems for years. They don't laugh, they still laugh.
Yeah, but one day. Wake up and you laugh about it. You know?
If you wake up, you will laugh. But if you don't, you'll be dead.
Okay, for me, I have like a big problem, and I'm like, I deal with this 1 day, 1 week, 1 month, and then I get tired, you know, it's stupid. And then the best thing I do is I go to the Vipassana, I forget about it, and then I come back and everything it comes back to, you know, not back to, but find its way.
Yeah, right.
So this is why I'm asking you, should we really reflect about our problems? Because what I experience is when the energy is balanced, when you come back home, everything is balanced.
Yes.
You know, for me.
Yes.
So I don't need to really deal with all of this, you know. What happened if I do this? What happened if I tell this? And if I would choose this? Or It's thinking.
Yes. I'm talking about that. And I'm not interested in people going into a story with lots and lots of thinking about. I agree to do that.
Yeah, but because when you come to deal with your problem, it's immediately a process of thinking that is happening. Normally.
It could be. But there are other avenues to relate to difficulties in life other than thinking about them. And the first one would be to ask the right question. The thinking about tends to be sometimes the fuel for the fire of the issue. And you know, there are some times with the meditator as well, it can feel too tight and too strict just to keep repeating the same thing, and maybe missing out on a lot more by doing by repetition of anything.
So it's not a repetition.
All right. In areas of issues and problems, would you like to be, you don't have to be, it's a public call here, would you like to be more specific? Don't have to be, because you just say, thank you, Chalot.
Motherhood.
Motherhood.
Yeah, I don't know if I want already.
Yeah.
To be a mother.
And how are you going to resolve this one? I don't have this problem. I don't have a father, but anyway, go ahead. All right, so what's the thinking?
The thinking is that my life is great as it is.
Great as it is.
Yes. Nice. And another thinking is that I might regret it in 10 years that I didn't.
You didn't have a baby. Yeah. You might regret it.
Yes.
You might regret it that you did.
That's what my husband says.
That's what your husband says. So what's your husband's view?
My husband is a Zen man.
He's a Zen man. I can't go and kid people when that's supposed to mix. you're sitting one room and he sits in the other. I tease you. All right. Well, Zen and Vipassana are in the same house. Isn't it? And yoga as well. Nice one. Right. So what's your husband saying about...
He's saying that if it will happen, it will happen. And he will be happy.
Very new age.
Or
Zen, Vipassana, yoga and new age. All together.
You didn't hear the end of it.
Oh, go on.
It's complicated enough.
Is it? So he says what will be, will be. Are you taking any precautions?
Only in my mind.
Only in your mind. So you're not looking at days and time of the month and contraceptives.
Yes, it's my profession. I'm a feminine yoga teacher, so I know everything about it.
All right. So I just want to get it clear. So the attitude is. From your husband and you, if you're keeping it open and you make love, and maybe a baby will come or maybe not.
Yes, but also I believe in the power of thought, and if I'm
the power of thought.
Yes, and if I'm not clear about it within myself, I don't believe it will happen.
Can I say, when I was in my mid-30s, I was absolutely clear that I didn't want to be a father. I was completely clear about it. And I had a 26-year-old daughter. How do you explain my clarity? I haven't got a lot of faith in the power of thought. Because that's what I thought, I was very. And my good lady at the time, Gwendolyn, also the same.
I don't know.
I'm saying that organic life is so powerful, it couldn't care a stuff about thought.
Probably.
I bet half of us in this room, most of us in this room, are unplanned. My mother didn't even have time to get married. So, will the thought about having or not having, is it helpful in any way?
No.
Life tends to move us along, doesn't it? Despite of our likes and our dislikes. So, why not just keep trust with that process? But rather than too much optimism with thought. A lot of optimism about thought, the power of thought.
Thank you.
Okay, lovely. Thank you. What's the time? So I just had a couple of quiet minutes to finish. I'll give a couple of minutes of reflection. sometimes when we are looking into ourselves, it isn't always easy for us to be rather clear with regard to the intentions. And sometimes we may have an idea about others' views or perceptions of us about what we are doing or where we are going. And certainly we can listen to those. But there's something about being true and authentic within, and a certain kind of trust that our intentions, critical faculty, that our intentions and our actions will be beneficial for us. And if they are beneficial for us, and therefore it brings out of us more love and greater awareness and compassion and sensitivity, and there's less anger and greed and negativity and confusion, it's not only of direct and immediate benefit for ourselves, but also for our loved ones and for others as well. And in that respect, we are here on behalf of others as much as we are on behalf of ourselves, because how we are does influence significantly the lives of many other people. And therefore, keeping trust with that. We also, we want to be, as was being pointed out there, very clear when it becomes narcissistic, when we're just obsessing about I, me and mine, and what I want, and getting quite removed and indifferent to other people. And it is an exploration of the inner and the outer, and the outer to the inner. Again, sometimes there are issues in our life which are not easy to attend to. We use the incident of the smoker. And many times in life, events which are going on around us are making an impact. And we used to find, and it's not always so easy, enough steadiness, just enough steadiness. To think, how can I handle this wisely? What is the wise response to this? And we may, as it were, have to listen away from our conditioned, reactive self. We've seen all the consequences of that conditioned, reactive self, of the individual, of the society, of the nation state, or whatever it might be. And we have to listen to somewhere else, much deeper. What is this relationship that we have with the person who lives next door, or lives who we share a house or home with, or the person in our street or in our neighbourhood, or wherever? And if we catch ourselves in the reactive mode, doing something rather similar as is being done to us, then we are not very deep, and we haven't gone very deep into ourselves. And so sometimes we have to listen, Buddhist language, for a moment, outside of the self, outside of the reactive movements. What is another way to respond to that? Something fresh, something different, something which is not the same. And that's what wisdom is, what love is. And it's understandable, and it does happen a lot, that we get the idea, and it's a false idea, that love and warm feelings is the same thing. There are many, many examples in our life where the act of love is not carrying a warm feeling. It simply isn't. And in fact, many of the major changes in life, in our life, in the life of others, in small groups of people coming together who perceive something is wrong, something is difficult, something is painful. And out of that, experience and knowledge of that, change has come. Important change, loving change, significant change. And the movement of the change is the act of love. It may start off and it may be very difficult all the way through and challenging and painful, but the act of love is moving. Sometimes too in our day-to-day life. I think it's rather important. I was speaking with somebody else earlier on here. We can get identified or attached to anything in life. And it's rather important, wherever we are, that includes here, to be able to recognize and appreciate what's valuable, what's insightful and useful for us. And to see any aspect which in any way is limiting. And method and technique, valuable, useful, but be watchful. Be watchful that that which serves, that we don't, whatever it is, including here, doesn't become tight and restrictive. We don't identify and tie ourselves to it, because we're not interested in the limited, which is the method and technique. We're interested in the realization of the limitless. Deeply interested in it. And that's important and vital. Many of the cushions, just finally, that you are sitting on the mat, they're made by a famous tailor. And they're made from, they're coming from Buddh Gaya. What is rather lovely is that the tailor, Jamal, is a very dear friend of mine and I've known since I was a monk, known him more than 30 years. He's a very, very devout Muslim in the village in Buddh Gaya. And I think just a lovely synchronicity here. That's Jamal, our Muslim tailor, who's a wonderful man. And says his prayers in his tiny little shop, you know, how good it is. Every day with his son working, tailors as a pedal machine that they have. And I think it's just rather lovely. He'll be especially delighted that we're here. We're sitting on his meditation cushion. We're using his mats. And the imam is close at hand. We're all blessed. Thank you.